Welcome to this archived LDN Research Trust conference presentation. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello, this is Dr. Ginevra Lipton. I'm an internal medicine trained physician with fibromyalgia myself, and I have a specialty practice devoted specifically to treating fibromyalgia in the United States. It's called the Frieda Center for Fibromyalgia. I'm also the author of the Fibromanual, a fibromyalgia treatment guide for you and your doctor. Today I'm going to review the central nervous system sensitization and the science that we know about what's happening in the body in fibromyalgia. I'm also going to talk about how we can use low-dose naltrexone to lessen fibromyalgia pain and specifically identify some ways we can avoid the troubling interactions between opiate-based pain medications and low-dose naltrexone. So I hope today that you'll learn some tips, tricks, and hopefully some new ways to use low-dose naltrexone to help your fibromyalgia patients. Fibromyalgia, first, let's just review a bit about what it is. It's a very common chronic condition that affects about 2 to 3% of the population worldwide. That means about 10 million Americans are thought to have fibromyalgia. It's a challenging condition because it is so debilitating, but yet patients look fine. So they have normal labs and imaging, but they describe widespread muscle pain, lots of tenderness in their muscles, and severe fatigue, along with sleep difficulties and brain fog. A lot of patients describe, quote, hurting all over, or always feeling like they have the flu. This is a typical fibromyalgia patient pain diagram, and you can see that the pain is not just in one localized area, but really widespread throughout the body. So about 15 years ago in 2002, the science of fibromyalgia really took a quantum leap in our understanding about what was happening in the body. And I'm going to review specifically the study that kind of changed everything in a moment. But in general, what we've learned is that there is an overactivity of pain-sensing nerves. And it seems that the brain has lost its ability to really control the volume of pain signals coming up into the brain. And the spinal cord is actually amplifying pain signals. So you can think about it like, imagine the pain as signals from a radio. The spinal cord is turning the volume of the radio up at the same time as the brain is losing its ability to kind of regulate or filter out those signals. And the ultimate effect is that the central nervous system, meaning the brain and spinal cord, have become more sensitive to pain. And that's where the term central sensitization has come in to describe this excess pain sensitivity that's happening in fibromyalgia. So this is the study that really changed everything as far as our understanding of fibromyalgia. Prior to this study in 2002, unfortunately, because there was no labs or imaging that showed distinct objective abnormalities in fibromyalgia patients. Unfortunately, many patients were thought to be hypochondriacs or just sort of, quote, hysterical women. There was really a lot of stigma and negative associations with fibromyalgia because we'd not yet been able to really document objective abnormalities. Now, this study was an imaging study that really changed everything. And what they did is they took people with fibromyalgia and compared them to healthy controls, and they looked at what was happening in their brains with pain stimulus. So this is in a functional MRI machine, which looks at blood flow. It's monitoring where blood flow is happening in the brain, and it's really a way to measure brain activity. So what they did is they they looked at what happens if you take healthy controls and fibromyalgia patients, put them in a functional MRI machine, and then squeeze their thumbs in a vise. And that's obviously a very painful stimulus. So what they found was, and in this little graph here, you can see the red triangle marks fibromyalgia and the green marks the healthy controls. And it took much less thumb vise pressure for the fibromyalgia patients to say, ow, compared to healthy controls. So this really showed that the sensitivity to a pain signal was much more intense in the fibromyalgia patients. It took a lot less pressure to get them to have significant levels of pain. The other really interesting thing that this study showed was that not only did the same areas of pain processing in the brain, the same areas lit up in both healthy controls and fibromyalgia patients, indicating that really the pain was signaling the same in the brain in healthy and fibromyalgia patients. They also found that extra areas, these red areas in these brain diagrams here, were lighting up in fibromyalgia patients, meaning the brain in fibromyalgia was recruiting extra areas to listen and really amplify these pain signals. More recently, in 2017, some other interesting research has really developed that shows that there's excess inflammation in the brain in fibromyalgia. And this study looked at the fluid that bathes our brain, the cerebrospinal fluid, and they found in fibromyalgia patients compared to healthy people that there were many more chemicals associated with inflammation. So what we're learning is that the brain in fibromyalgia is extremely sensitive to pain signals. It amplifies pain signals. And there's excess proteins related to inflammation. Taking this all together, it would seem that the perfect treatment for fibromyalgia would be something that could both lessen the brain sensitivity to pain, lower the amplification from pain, and reduce the neuroinflammation in the brain. And guess what? There is some medication that do that, and low-dose naltrexone is one of them. And one key thing to understand about central sensitization is that there's a really important role for very interesting cells called glia. And these cells were long thought to be just sort of support cells that didn't really have much role. But more recently, we've learned that they have an incredibly important role in what happens in the brain in central sensitization. And in general, these glial cells are really best thought of as immune cells that act to protect the neurons in the central nervous system. And these glial cells usually are in a sort of state of kind of hibernation, where they are monitoring but not actively sending out lots of signals. But that all changes when there's any damage to neurons in the brain or when there's a lot of inflammation in the brain. And as we discussed, we do know in fibromyalgia that there is some inflammation in the brain. So what happens is that when there's kind of an inflammatory chemical soup in the brain, these glial cells become activated. And what they do when they're activated is they themselves release even more chemicals of inflammation. And they also release chemicals that excite or irritate the neurons around them. And it's this increased neuronal excitability that is what causes the central sensitization, meaning it takes a lot less signal to activate that nerve. And then those nerves are really amplifying pain signals. I've found it useful to think about glial cells as really vital in understanding the process of central sensitization. And it can be a little bit hard to think about the hypersensitivity to pain And I'd like to give you kind of a real life example. So imagine that you've given yourself a paper cut, and it hurts, it's painful, but then imagine that you get some lemon juice in that paper cut. Now, the pain from that paper cut is much more intense. And in fact, what the lemon juice has done, it hasn't made the paper cut bigger, but it's hypersensitized the nerve cells in the paper cut so that they now are expressing much louder pain signals. And activated glial cells are essentially spraying lemon juice all over the neurons around them in the brain, triggering them to become more sensitive, hypersensitive to pain, and making the pain signals that the nerves are sending off much louder. So the typical treatments that we use to lessen the central sensitization in fibromyalgia come in kind of two flavors. We use anticonvulsants and medications like pregabalin and gabapentin are used because they help decrease pain amplification. They sort of slow down the signals as they go up the spinal cord and act to turn the pain volume down. The other group of medications that we use to treat central sensitization are antidepressants that boost serotonin and norepinephrine levels in the brain. And these act to help the brain to filter out pain signals better. So if you imagine the anticonvulsants as sort of turning the pain volume down, you could imagine the antidepressants as basically like putting earplugs in the brain so that it's not able to hear the pain signals quite as well. Both of these are really acting on the neurons themselves. They're really neglecting the glia. They're neglecting this lemon juice that's getting sprayed all over the brain and irritating those nerves. They do help, but part of these limitations of using these medications is that they have significant side effect profiles and they're only partly effective. So the side effect profile really includes a lot of weight gain, which nobody likes, excessive sweating, and that really is uncomfortable and can limit the usage of these medications. A lot of people also feel the anticonvulsants sort of act to slow down their cognitive process and make people feel like their brain isn't working as quickly. And for patients that are already dealing with fibro fog, that effect is really, really problematic and really limits their usage. And I think the biggest reason why these treatments are not more effective is because they're only really working on the neurons. They're kind of neglecting the glial cells that seem to be the kind of key in developing this central sensitization. So they're not really addressing the root problem. So in fact, something that could address the glial cell activation would be a much better treatment option to lower the central sensitization. And that's where I think low-dose naltrexone is going to really outshine these other treatments, because we know that the low-dose naltrexone acts as a glial cell modulator and, in effect, kind of quiets their activity and sends them back into almost their usual state of hibernation. It lowers the glial cell release of that lemon juice, that irritating, inflammatory, and excitatory chemical soup. And because it's lowering the glial cell release of inflammatory chemicals, it's really acting as an anti-inflammatory in the central nervous system. And this kind of allows the nerve cells to normalize the volume on pain signals again. So rather than just sort of trying to suppress the end effects of neuronal activation and excess pain signals, it's much better if we can kind of lessen the trigger that's kind of irritating those neurons. So that's the way I like to think about low-dose naltrexone fibromyalgia, that it's acting as an anti-inflammatory to help the glial cells get back into hibernation and stop irritating and exciting the surrounding nerve cells. Two really well done studies, both performed at Stanford University in the United States, looked at low-dose naltrexone as a treatment for fibromyalgia. Both of these studies found that the majority of subjects reported significant pain reduction, and at least half of the participants reported feeling much improved or very much improved while taking low-dose naltrexone. And I will tell you that that is very different from the majority of what you see with other kind of more typical fibromyalgia treatments. When people are on the anticonvulsant treatments or the antidepressant treatments to lower central sensitization, most of the time people will kind of tell you, yeah, I feel a little bit better. You know, things are slightly improved. You don't often see that people are reporting feeling much improved or very much improved. So that's a very different, much more powerful effect that we saw with low-dose naltrexone in these studies. And the side effects were, in general, pretty mild, in general, pretty short-lived. Side effects included headache, vivid dreams, some insomnia or anxiety, but again, didn't, for the most part, result in patients stopping the low-dose naltrexone treatment, whereas in studies looking at the anticonvulsant or antidepressant treatments for fibromyalgia, lots of people stopped taking them because of side effects. So there was a huge kind of dropout effect in those studies that you don't see on the low-dose naltrexone ones. And I wanted to just share some of my clinical experience with low-dose naltrexone and go over a few of my case studies. I have found that low-dose naltrexone is effective in about two-thirds of the patients who I've tried it on in my clinic. And when it works, it's a pretty dramatic improvement. I have found that fibromyalgia patients do tend to be more sensitive to side effects. So in the studies that were done at Stanford, the dosage for low-dose naltrexone was 4.5 milligrams at bedtime, and they just started them right on that dosage. Instead, what I've found to be more tolerable in this population is to start with a lower dose of about 1.5 milligrams, do that for 2 weeks, then go up to 3 milligrams for 2 weeks. And if patients are tolerating that, then go up to 4.5 milligrams as an ongoing dosage. And I'll talk a little bit later about some other strategies to find the right dosage for patients. The other thing that I'll talk about a little bit later is, unfortunately, so many fibromyalgia patients are already taking opiates because there's not really that many great pain relief options available for fibromyalgia patients other than opiates. And because naltrexone is a opiate blocker, that can really limit its usage in a patient population that are already taking opiates. There are some strategies to get around this by using different dosages of naltrexone. But in general, the usage of opiates is really kind of the biggest challenge around combining low-dose naltrexone in, or kind of using low-dose naltrexone for the general fibromyalgia clinic population. I'll go into some more specifics about that in a moment. But first, I wanted to introduce you to one of my patients. So Brenda is a very active 43-year-old woman who is a mother of two twins, and she runs a restaurant with her husband. Her pain initially started when she seemed to injure her right abdominal wall while bending over to pick up a shirt. She felt a tearing pain in her abdomen, and she consulted multiple surgeons, was found to have a small hernia there that was repaired. But even after the repair, she continued to have this intense right abdominal wall pain. And unfortunately, as time went on, and this is a pretty typical progression in fibromyalgia, where it will start maybe with an acute localized injury, but then pain will spread. And for Brenda, it ultimately spread to the entire right side of her body, she described tenderness localized really in that right abdominal area. But in actuality, she was very tender over her whole body, and she started to experience more and more fatigue. She ultimately was seen at our local university clinic here, was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and didn't find much benefit from the typical treatment that she was recommended, and that did include kind of those medications that I reviewed earlier, the anticonvulsants and antidepressant approach. She was ultimately referred to my clinic to see if there was different options that we could help her with. So I worked with her on improving her sleep quality. Muscle relaxants helped somewhat with her pain. Her fatigue did seem to improve as we improved her sleep, but nothing really helped with that intense right-sided flank pain. And that was really scary to her and really interfering with her ability to be active. And her family was actually planning a year-long travel adventure around the world, and she wanted to be able to do that with her family. So we started low-dose naltrexone. At the lowest dosage of 1.5 milligrams, she did have some side effects. She had some sleep disruption. She had a few nights where she really couldn't sleep at all. She felt quite dizzy with the low-dose naltrexone, but I encouraged her to keep up with it. And actually, after about 3 days, the side effects had dissipated. And after that, she did tolerate dosage escalation up to the 3-milligram level. But because she'd had such side effects initially, we just left the dosage there at 3 milligrams. And then about a month after we started the low-dose naltrexone, she was able to leave on her trip. And I was very excited to get this email from her about 6 months later. And it said, "Greetings from Laos. Low-dose naltrexone is a lifesaver. It has diminished that pesky side pain by at least 35%. It seems the full effects took place a few months into our trip. I want to shout to the world that it is the best." And this is a picture that she included from her adventures. And I think the takeaway from her case is that it can take with fibromyalgia at least 2 to 3 months to see the full benefits from low-dose naltrexone. Another takeaway is that side effects will usually go away quickly, but if they do not, make sure to modify the dosage escalation. And in fact, I've had some patients that I've really had to go up much more slowly, and I've had several patients that I've had to maintain at that lower dose of 1.5 milligrams for about 2 months before I went up to the next dosage. And so you have to be able to kind of massage and modify the dosage per each individual patient's experience. But as with Brenda, side effects did go away pretty quickly. Jessica is my next patient, who's a 37-year-old city planner. She's overweight and has severe joint hypermobility, which is quite common in fibromyalgia. And what that means for her is that she had a lot of issues around her joints, particularly her hips, her low back, and her mid back. And she'd been diagnosed with fibromyalgia 7 years earlier at age 30, and she'd found a lot of strategies that helped her with kind of more of the fatigue issues that accompany fibromyalgia. But she really had not found anything to help the mid and low back pain. And she had extreme skin tenderness, and this is very common in fibromyalgia. She was so tender that she couldn't stand to wear a bra. We decided to add low-dose naltrexone. She tolerated it really well. We did the more rapid dosage escalation. And after about a month of being on the 4.5 milligram dosage, she reported back to me that her back pain had reduced from an 8 out of 10 to a 3 out of 10. And she was very excited to tell me that she could now wear a bra comfortably because her tenderness, her extreme tenderness, had really dramatically reduced. And I think that's the most common thing that I hear from patients with fibromyalgia who do use low-dose naltrexone, that seems to reduce that extreme tenderness. I mean, these patients can be so tender that even just, you know, a hug can feel like they're being punched. And I think that's where I see low-dose naltrexone being so helpful. But here's where things get a bit tricky, because both Jessica and Brenda were not taking opiates to manage their pain. But many fibromyalgia patients are taking opiates to manage their pain. Studies show that 30 to 40% of fibromyalgia patients are prescribed opiates. In my specialty practice, clinically, I would say the numbers are higher than that. And it seems like about 50 to 60% of the patients that come to see me are already taking opiates. And that has really limited my ability to prescribe low-dose naltrexone for these patients, because naltrexone in higher doses acts as an opiate blocker. Now, when we're using low-dose naltrexone to help with central sensitization, we're not actually getting that opiate-blocking effect. What we're really getting are the glial cell modulation effects. So naltrexone seems to have activity at multiple different receptors in the body. It works on both opiate receptors, and it also works on glial cell receptors called toll-like receptor 4. And these are mostly found on glial cells and other immune cells. But we're learning more and more about the different ways that naltrexone is utilized in the body. But for today's talk, really want to focus on kind of this overlap of the beneficial effects that we're getting from low-dose naltrexone really seem to be based on its activity on the glial cell receptors. There's some evidence that perhaps there may be some beneficial activity from the low-dose naltrexone actually interacting with the opiate receptors, because it's possible that it may be able to kind of reset our own body's endorphins, our own body's natural opiate-like pain relievers. This is an area of a lot of kind of interest and research right now. But the challenge comes in if people are already taking opiates and then we give them an opiate blocker with low-dose naltrexone. Are we going to knock the opiates off of their receptors? And are we going to induce unpleasant symptoms of withdrawal in patients? Because certainly that's going to be a huge deterrent for using low-dose naltrexone along with opiates. Taking a step back, looking at kind of the global issue with opiates for fibromyalgia patients, one hugely negative effect of chronic use of opiates, particularly higher dose opiates on a daily basis, is in fact we found that they can cause glial cell activation themselves. So imagine a picture where somebody is taking daily opiates to lessen their pain, but in fact, that daily use of opiates is activating the glial cells to spread and release that irritating lemon juice inflammation and actually can be worsening their pain. And this is what we think might cause what's called opiate-induced hyperalgesia. And that basically means worsened pain due to long-term opiate use. And in fact, could the daily use of opiates actually worsen the central sensitization and worsen fibromyalgia pain? That's entirely possible. And in fact, that may be why when we look at studies of opiates used long-term for chronic pain management or fibromyalgia management, we find that in fact, they're really not helpful. One interesting study looked at over about a four-year period in a rheumatologic practice, what were patients' pain scores that were taking daily opiates. So those patients with fibromyalgia that took daily opiates, their pain scores on average were unchanged over the 4 years that they were taking opiates. But over time, other symptoms worsened. Their depression worsened, their quality of life worsened. And in fact, you would expect that their pain scores would be reduced, but they were not. They remained the same, or in some cases, were even a little bit higher. So that has been why opiates have not been favored as a long-term management option for chronic pain. One way that I like to explain this to patients is if you imagine the pain signals as noise from a television, and let's say that the TV is really loud and you walk into the room and you really are annoyed by the sound from the TV. And to lessen the sound, you put in earplugs. That's what opiates are like. Using opiates to manage pain are like putting in earplugs to block out pain signals. But in fact, the opiates are also at the same time turning up the volume on the TV. So you can imagine that if you're both putting in earplugs to block TV noise, but at the same time turning up the volume on the TV, that you're not actually going to get much reduction at all. And pretty soon, the noise will be just as loud as if you didn't have earplugs in at all. And that's what using opiates to manage long-term chronic pain is like. On the one hand, it's blocking the pain signals, but on the other hand, because it's worsening the central sensitization, it's increasing pain signals. But there is some potential, and there are some ways that we could combine naltrexone to get some of the benefits and perhaps even limit some of the negative long-term side effects from opiates. So we know, as we discussed, that naltrexone is one method of its action is that it's an opiate blocker. Because it's an opiate blocker, it doesn't mix well with opiates. And the concern is that the naltrexone can really kick the opiates off their receptors and induce withdrawal symptoms. And of course, if you induce withdrawal symptoms, which are unpleasant, you can also worsen pain at the same time. One of the biggest symptoms of opiate withdrawal is worsened pain. But this effect does seem to be dosage dependent. And we've seen, and there's been some interesting research, and I'll talk about my clinical experience with this, that naltrexone dosages below 1 milligram, so-called ultra-low dose naltrexone, could potentially benefit both chronic pain and perhaps allow us to use naltrexone along with opiates and maybe even lessen some of the long-term side effects of opiates. So let's talk a little bit about that. So this review article looked at kind of all the different ways that opioid antagonists, and that's kind of the name for the type of medication that naltrexone is. Antagonist means blocker. And this article found that low doses of opioid blockers seem to reset the opioid receptor system, enhancing analgesia while overcoming prior opioid tolerance. So what that means is, could we, for people that are taking daily opiates to manage pain, if we add a teensy dose of naltrexone, could we help them both to get better pain relief, lessen the central sensitization that can occur with daily opiate use, and perhaps make it so that they don't have to escalate their dosage, so they don't have to increase your opioid amount as you become more tolerant to it. So there's huge potential there. So these two studies basically looked at oxycodone, an opiate, and combined it with ultra-low-dose naltrexone and found that for both osteoarthritis and low back pain, that subjects getting the combination of oxycodone and ultra-low-dose naltrexone had both better pain relief and lower side effects. So in my practice, what I have found is that it is possible to combine ultra-low-dose naltrexone and opiates together, but it's very tricky, and I've definitely had some successes and some failures. So with one patient who is using the fentanyl patch, which is a patch that secretes a continuous amount of fentanyl into the system, so basically a continuous infusion of fentanyl, when we tried her on a naltrexone dosage of 0.5 milligrams, she found it pretty instantaneously that it caused nausea, sweating, and anxiety. It's really uncomfortable for her. She did not get any benefit from it, and the side effects were so intense that we did have to stop using it. So that was a failure. With another patient, however, I did have benefit when I used a lower dose of 0.35 milligrams combined with as needed hydrocodone plus acetaminophen dosage. So she was not taking a continuous amount of opiates. She was taking just as needed. So we had dosage flexibility. What I instructed her to do was to separate her naltrexone dose from her opiate dose by at least 6 hours. And with that, and with that lower dose, the 0.35 milligrams, she found that she had overall lower levels of pain. She had no side effects. We did not seem to induce withdrawal. And she was able to tolerate it. So the tips that I would give when you're trying to combine ultra-low dose naltrexone plus an opiate is that the dosage range around 0.3 to 0.35 milligrams seems to be the best tolerated. At dosages lower than that, people didn't seem to get much of the naltrexone benefit. And certainly there's a lot of variability here. I know that different clinicians have tried different dosages. Unfortunately, there's not really been any well-done large studies looking at combining in a clinical setting, combining ultra-low-dose naltrexone plus opiates. So it's really sort of just anecdotal evidence at this point. But my experience seems to be that that dosage seems to be where you get at 0.3 to 0.35, where you can still retain the benefits of naltrexone, but limit the side effects. I have not found a good way to combine ultra-low-dose naltrexone with the long-acting opiates. And by that, I mean things like the fentanyl patch, which is a continuous amount of opiate coming into your system, or the extended-release oral formulations like oxycodone. It seems to me that when you have that continuous long-acting opiate effect, that you're more likely to induce withdrawal symptoms when you put in, when you combine the naltrexone, simply because the opiate receptors are continually being filled by the opiates. And so any naltrexone you put into the system is likely to knock those out and cause side effects. However, I have had pretty good success combining ultra-low-dose naltrexone with short-acting opiates, because those are not occupying the opiate receptors continuously so that we can get some time where the opiates can be occupying the receptors, but then some time where those receptors are not being occupied. And so that's where I've found combining the short-acting opiates with ultra-low-dose naltrexone, but still I think it's safest to separate the dosage by 6 hours. And 6 hours, there's nothing magic about that number, except that clinically that seems to be the amount of time that allows the receptors to sort of be emptied of their opiates so that we're not being bothered by any interaction between the naltrexone and the opiate. So, for example, what I will tell patients is, you know, if they're taking their ultra-low-dose naltrexone at bedtime, so let's say they're taking that at 10 p.m., they want to make sure to not take any pain medication, any short-acting opiate, any later than 4 p.m. And certainly that can be, you know, a little bit challenging for patients. But I think that this is the way that we can kind of get the best of both worlds. We can get the benefit of low-dose naltrexone and the benefit of short-acting opiates. I think that this is something that clinicians have to work to really individualize their regimen with patients. And there may be patients that can tolerate long-acting opiates, and there may be different dosages, maybe lower dosages of ultra-low-dose naltrexone that we'll discover that you can combine with the long-acting opiates. But this has been my clinical experience that combination of a long-acting opiate plus even the ultra-low-dose naltrexone is a more challenging combination, but that it's a lot easier to combine it with a short-acting opiate. And this is really important because so many clinicians that are interested in prescribing low-dose naltrexone for their fibromyalgia patients are kind of flummoxed by the fact that so many of them are already taking opiates. And I think it really behooves us in the fibromyalgia clinical world, taking care of patients, to find ways that we can combine opiates and ultra-low-dose naltrexone. Ultimately, I think we do need to publish some trials about this so that we can really, in a more scientific way, determine what are the best dosages of ultra-low-dose naltrexone, what's the best dosage strategies. Maybe it would be better to do it twice daily rather than a once daily dose. Maybe it would be better to take it along with the oxycodone at the same time. In the studies that I referenced earlier, where they were combining the oxycodone plus the ultra-low-dose naltrexone, they were actually combining it in one pill. They were actually a drug company looking at kind of a combination of the ultra-low-dose naltrexone and oxycodone. So perhaps it might even be better to do it that way. But again, a lot more work needs to be done on it. And clinically, what I've found is it works better. It seems to work better if we have separated the dosage. So in summary, what we know about fibromyalgia is that the pain sensitivity regulation system has gone haywire. We see central sensitization due to activated glial cells. And while there are some prescription options that can help lower that central sensitivity, if we could actually find treatments to instead kind of deactivate those glial cells, that would be a much more effective way to get at the root of the problem. And I think low-dose naltrexone is the most promising candidate for a medication that really acts as a glial cell modulator. I encourage anyone who treats fibromyalgia patients to look at low-dose naltrexone as an option. I also encourage anyone that treats fibromyalgia patients to really try and dive more deeply into understanding the science of fibromyalgia. And any fibromyalgia patients as well really need to educate themselves about how to treat fibromyalgia. And that's why my book, the Fibro Manual, I focus both towards patients, but also towards providers, because unfortunately, the scientific understanding and medical treatment available for fibromyalgia is really about 50 years behind where it should be. And I won't go into my soapbox too much other than to say that because we didn't find objective abnormalities in fibromyalgia until 2002, prior to that, people were really still operating under the assumption that fibromyalgia was really something that was in people's heads. It wasn't a real illness. Since 2002, we do know now that it absolutely is real. And there's been a cascade of other really high quality research finding sleep abnormalities in fibromyalgia, finding abnormalities in the nervous system response to stress in fibromyalgia. We know that there's excess levels of inflammation both in the brain and peripherally in fibromyalgia. And all of that is really important to take into account when you're treating fibromyalgia. So I encourage you to check out the Fibro Manual, a complete fibromyalgia treatment guide for you and your doctor, which contains information targeted both towards patients who need to educate themselves on how to treat fibromyalgia and maybe even bring information back to their doctor. It also contains an appendix and information for the doctors themselves that is evidence-based, science-driven, and extensively referenced so that healthcare providers can educate themselves on how to best treat their fibromyalgia patients. And I want to leave you with just a little brief story about Frida Kahlo. That's who's in this image on the left. She was a famous Mexican painter in the early 20th century. She suffered from chronic pain her entire life, and this image called The Broken Column is, I think, one of the best visual depictions of what fibromyalgia feels like. And you can see all the nails that she drew poking into her skin. And that really reflects kind of this excessive tenderness and all over muscle pain that we see in fibromyalgia. And what I wonder is, had Frida Kahlo had the option to try low-dose naltrexone, would this image look different? Would her self-portrait look different? So with that, I thank you for your attention. I hope this has been informative and encourage you to check out the Fibro Manual if you want to learn any more about fibromyalgia management. I also blog at drlipton.com. I'll keep you updated on any new scientific discoveries in the ever-changing world of fibromyalgia treatment. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this presentation. All past conference presentations can be found on our website, www.ldnresearchtrust.org.